This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The North Carolina General Assembly is paying a lot of attention to education this session. The Senate's budget proposal would lift restrictions on class size and limit spaces in public preschools for at-risk four-year-olds. Meanwhile, a House committee approved yesterday a bill that would give taxpayer funds to poor students to pay for private or religious schooling. WUNC Raleigh Bureau Chief and Education Reporter Dave DeWitt joins us now to talk about the state of education in North Carolina. Dave, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
Let's start with that bill that would give poor students money for private schools. Sounds like vouchers to me.
It is a voucher. Proponents don't want to use that word, but that's exactly what it is. And what it would do is give $4,200 to families that want to send a student from a public school to a private school. And North Carolina has a lot of private schools, most of which, about two-thirds, are religiously affiliated. And that's one concern that opponents have, that it would somehow mix up the sort of public and religious aspects. But mostly what they're concerned about, opponents, are that this money would leave the school system, public school system, and follow these low-income families, that $4,200 per student to the private school.
Because when you say give, you don't mean give an extra $4,200. This is money that's already allocated for that school system, comes out of the public system and into that private school.
That's right. And North Carolina has a unique way of funding schools. They do it on a state allocated per pupil basis. So if a school has 1,000 students, they get a per pupil funding for that. If they have 900, they get that much less. So both from the state and from their local, usually county commissioners. So if those students leave for any reason, that money goes with them.
So you say opponents are a little bit worried about the impact on the public school system when that money leaves. Also, are we mixing religion and state a little bit too much? What do the proponents say? Why is this a good idea?
Proponents say it evens the playing field. Folks at the high income level have had educational options since time began. They can take their students out of public schools, put them into private schools. Homeschool is an option for high income folks. All of those things. Low-income families have a lot fewer options. They basically have the public school, and that's pretty much it, because they can't afford private school and they can't afford a homeschool. Now, with this voucher, the proponents say that this will even the playing field, that low-income families can have the same amount of choice that middle and higher income families do.
$4,200, does that buy you a year in public and private school?
It would at some, or get close to some, religiously affiliated school. There's a school, a couple schools in Raleigh, the Thales Academies, that are about a little bit more than that. But the vast majority of private schools are more than $4,200 a year. And that's another thing that opponents say, is that it simply won't give those families an actual opportunity. They'll have to dig in to what limited resources they have to make up that difference. Now, it might be that the private schools will find scholarships for low-income families. That's what proponents are hoping for, that somehow that the schools can meet these students halfway, because a lot of these private schools are not diverse places. They are places that hope to diversify. Some of them hope to diversify, and they hope to see this as an opportunity to do so.
All right. And another thing opponents might worry about is this is now limited to poor children, but of course, there's nothing to stop it from being expanded in years coming.
That's right. There are many states and the District of Columbia that have these voucher programs. And typically, it's followed a model where low-income students may get the vouchers first, although that's not been the case everywhere. And then they expand it. They say, well, look at these great results we have, whether they're actual great results. You can make educational statistics say almost anything you want to say. So then proponents would say, look at these great results. Let's expand it, because now we don't want to squeeze the middle family. So they would expand the voucher program, which would cut that pie up for public education even more. And as we know, general funding is going down for North Carolina. North Carolina, you know, had gotten, for example, teacher fund salaries had, they'd always been pretty bad in the high 40s among all the states. They'd gotten into the 20s and 30s. Things had gotten better under both Republican and Democratic governors. Now we're watching those teacher salaries, go back the wrong direction, especially if you're a teacher or a proponent of public education.
You know, it's interesting for those people who are in favor of privatizing education altogether and ending public education. This could be kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, couldn't it? I mean, if you say our schools are broken and then take more and more money away, 2 years from now you say, and now look how broken they are.
Right. And still, that idea of privatizing all education is a pretty fringe idea, or at least spoken out in public. But all of these little cuts, you know, when charter schools expand, that takes away money from the traditional public schools. When private schools expand, that takes away money from the traditional public schools. And what it does, many people will say, is it leaves the public schools with the most difficult to educate students. Private schools have the opportunity to say, well, we don't have an English as second language program. We don't have exceptional children programs. And they can turn those students away. Public schools take everybody. And so that's the other part of this. Beyond the funding, it's you create a system or multiple systems pulling from a diminishing pot of money, but also you get students who are unable to leave the public schools for one reason or another, whether they have a voucher or money or not.
Let's move to the Senate budget that passed last week and talk about one item in particular, lifting the cap on class size. What effect might that have?
Well, lifting the cap on class size is something that Republicans want to do because they say it'll free up the local school districts to make those decisions themselves. And in many cases, that will happen, and for some good reasons, for some bad reasons. For example, there are a lot of school districts that want to start dual language immersion programs, maybe Chinese or Spanish. And when you do that, you have to start in kindergarten with 25, 26 kids, because as kids leave the program, you can't insert new kids in second or third grade into a Chinese language program because they need those couple of years before that. And so by the time you get up to fourth or fifth grade, there's only 15 or 16 kids. Those are some school districts. Some other school districts want to eliminate the cap because they want to put their resources elsewhere. All research we've seen, and I think you can, peer-reviewed research says smaller class sizes, especially in those primary grades, helps student achievement. Why would you want to remove this cap when you've got something so obvious that keeping these class sizes small is going to help? And so that's what opponents of this say. Look, we need to keep this cap in place because it's working.
Another thing that had been working for a while in the state of North Carolina was publicly funded pre-K classrooms, particularly for those who are at the low income level. That's changing too.
Yeah, this is another thing where the research is really clear. If you go to a quality pre-K program and you're an at-risk child as a 4 or 5 year old, you're going to do better once you get into school, and you're going to stay out of trouble once you get through school. But they cost money. It costs a lot of money to send 40 or 50,000 kids to quality pre-K. And so what the Republican legislature right now is doing is they are limiting the qualifications. In other words, they're making it more difficult for a family to qualify. They have to essentially earn less now to qualify for quality pre-K than they would have 2 or 3 years ago. That's going to limit the number of kids who get into quality pre-K programs.
How many kids are going to be affected? What's the percentage of kids?
Well, it's hard to tell because the numbers are sort of and you're projecting, but you're essentially going to eliminate almost half, probably. Wow. of the kids who qualify. Now, all the kids who qualify don't go for whatever reason, at-risk kids. There's a lot of family reasons why a family wouldn't get into a quality pre-K. But certainly money is a big reason because they don't have the money. Now, what happens when you take this away? Some of those kids will go to pre-K, but they may not be of high quality. And the research is really clear that it's got to be a high quality pre-K for it to do the job for the kid as he gets older.
And it's interesting because the state began to expand its pre-K programs about 12, 15 years ago. And sure enough, here at the end of the pipeline, for the first time, we're seeing a drop in the dropout rate. Mm-hmm. Why? 12 years after we expanded these pre-K programs. Correlation only, not causation.
Right.
But awfully tantalizing.
Boy, and hard to ignore. And, North Carolina was viewed nationally as a leader for its quality pre-K programs, and now it'll go back and probably be below average again.
I want to talk to you about a feature you did on a charter school in Pamlico County. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this caught my eye because Arapahoe Charter School in Pamlico County, one charter school in Pamlico County, and for those who don't know, Pamlico County is on the Inner Banks. It's on the other side of New Bern. It's very poor and very rural. There's not much industry there. They were really hit hard, by Hurricane Irene a year and a half ago. So this is a county that's has very few students. All the students in kindergarten through 12th grade is about half the size of the largest high school in Wake County. But what's happened is Arapahoe Charter School started when they closed a small K-8 school in this little tiny town of Arapahoe. Just so happened they closed it when the charter school allowed charter schools to start. So this charter school has had a long time to sort of get going and rolling, and it's doing very well. It draws about 19% of all students in Pamlico County, this one charter school. Nine charter schools in Durham draw about 9% of all students in Durham, to give you an example or a comparison. So Arapaho Charter School wants to expand even more, go through high school. That would take almost a third of all students, and that would really, really impact, for reasons we were just talking about, how much funding goes to the Pamlico County schools. You see both sides of this issue. You see a quality school that pays for transportation, pays for free and reduced price lunch. Charter schools don't have to do that, but this one does. Families love it. It's really a community school. But you also see the other side, where this other school district says, look, we have 30 kids on our football team. We have a marching band where we have to go from 7th grade all the way up to 12th just to have enough kids in our marching band, and it's only 12 kids still. So you understand, you watch a public school system lose more resources as a charter school gets bigger and better, but you know it's doing very well by its students too, and it's a perfect example of what could happen in rural counties if charter schools are allowed to expand.
Let's move to Wake County very quickly. Superintendent's race in that county, and you attended a forum last night, unusual kind of forum.
Yeah, me and about 100 other people attended this forum. It was sparsely populated. Three candidates sort of put through the public paces. This is new in Wake County. The last two superintendents in Wake County were hired quietly, and both were let go. For interactions with the board. Yeah. And now there are three new folks, and you know they all have good experience. They've all been around a while. It's going to be a very interesting choice because now people have seen them. They all have their personal favorites. What the school board comes up with now, they're going to be – some people will be pleased. Some people will not be pleased. But at least it's a public process, and for most people I've talked to, they think that's an improvement.
Timeline?
They hope to have somebody in 1st of July.
Dave, thanks so much. Always good to talk with you.
My pleasure.
Dave DeWitt, WUNC, Raleigh Bureau Chief and Education Reporter. Just ahead, we tackle the controversial Silent Sam Monument on the campus of UNC Chapel Hill. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.